भगवते वासुदेवाय अदस्य प्रातुहितरम् उपयेमेति तपताम् यस्यां रुचिचितो जाते इन्मदाहात्मजो मुनिः. Translation. The great sage named Agastya married the firstborn daughter of Malayadvaja, the avowed devotee of Lord Krishna. From her one son was born, whose name was Dhritachyuta, and from him another son was born, whose name was Idmavaha. Purport by His Divine Grace, Isi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The name Agastya Muni is very significant. Agastya Muni represents the mind. The word Agastya indicates that the senses do not act independently, and the word Muni means mind. The mind is the center of all the senses, and thus the senses cannot work independent of the mind. When the mind takes to the cult of bhakti, it engages in devotional service. The cult of bhakti, bhakti lata, is the first daughter of Malayadvaja. And as previously described, her eyes are always upon Krishna as he takes shanam. One cannot render bhakti to any demigod. Bhakti can be rendered only to Vishnu, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu. Thinking the absolute truth to be without form, the Mayavadis say that the word bhakti can apply to any form of worship. If this were the case, a devotee could imagine any demigod or any godly form and worship it. This, however, is not the real fact. The real fact is that bhakti can be applied only to Vishnu and his expansions. Therefore, bhakti lata is dridhavrata, the great vow. For when the mind is completely engaged in devotional service, the mind does not fall down. If one tries to advance by other means, by karma yoga or jnana yoga, one will fall down. But if one is fixed in bhakti, he never falls down. Thus, from bhakti lata, the son Dhritachyuta is born. And from Dhritachyuta, the next son, Idmavaha, is born. The word Idmavaha refers to one who carries wood for burning in a sacrifice when approaching a spiritual master. The point is that bhakti lata, the cult of devotion, fixes one in his spiritual position. One so fixed never comes down, and he begets children who are strict followers of the shastric injunctions, as said in the Vedas, tad vijnanartham. So gurum eva bigachit samitpani shrotriyam brahmanishtam. In the line of devotional service, those who are initiated are strict followers of the Vedic scriptural injunctions. So, purpose of every living entity is bhakti. He's supposed to be a bhakta. Ekale Ishvara Krishna Arasava Britya. Britya means servant, and ekale means one. There's only one master, Ishvara, and that's Krishna. Everyone else is meant to serve Krishna. Therefore, it's not possible for living entities to be properly situated if they try to worship or not worship someone else. If they try not to worship Krishna, or they try to worship someone else in his place, then they cannot be properly situated, because they're not meant for that. It's not their nature. In other words, it doesn't work properly. There's no fruit. There's no benefit. One may say, I'll give food to different parts of the body to be magnanimous, but by giving food to the ears and the nose, the body doesn't benefit, the whole doesn't benefit. It's just a waste of energy, and ultimately ends up in loss of hearing and suffocation. So there's no value. Just like worshiping the demigods are jiva souls. They're just like all the rest of us. So to worship one of them will not be satisfactory, because they're not the master, they're not the supreme enjoyer. They cannot absorb our offerings of love. And similarly, they cannot reciprocate properly. They won't reciprocate our offering properly, and they won't be able to give back what we're looking for. What are we looking for? We're looking for our swarup. We're looking for our eternal constitutional position of loving exchange relationship. And that means completely spiritual, because the soul is completely spiritual, and his relationship can only be proper when it's with the supreme spiritual being, personality. If I worship a demigod, am I worshiping the soul, or am I worshiping the body of the demigod? Because if I'm worshiping the soul, but the soul is an illusion. The soul in the demigod's body, he's also, according to Bhagavatam, he's also bewildered, Muyanti. He's thinking he's the body also. And how long will he be in that body? So how long can that relationship last? Can I last very long? Because how long will I be in this body? How long will he be in that body? So the whole thing is changing. It's not a lasting relationship. The soul wants to be connected with the supreme enjoyable person. And Krishna is all attractive in every aspect. He's the most beautiful, he's the most wealthy, he's the most powerful. He can give us protection, for example. If you want to love someone, you think that this person will give you shelter, and then they're unable to give you shelter, you're disappointed. I thought that this person would give me shelter, or I thought this person would be faithful to me. Everyone has some experience of that. I gave my love to this person thinking that they would reciprocate, and then they went for someone else. So now I'm disappointed. Or I thought they could protect me, and then they lost all their money. They were gambling at the casino. They lost everything. It's a disappointment. It's difficult to love someone who wastes all the money, spends all the family investments, and they say, that's all right, just love me. Don't worry about the house and the home and the estate. No. So Krishna He never loses anything. The goddess of fortune is his eternal consort. Whereas we see that others, sometimes they, it's like Indra. Indra sometimes becomes defeated and he has to flee his palace in Svargaloka and he has to go and hide in the water somewhere. And someone else sits on his throne. But we never hear that Goloka is taken over by someone else. Someone has come and done an invasion and Krishna is removed. And or Vaikuntha. So therefore the expansions of the Lord, they're Vishnu Tattva. Therefore one can get the full benefit from worshipping Krishna or Vishnu and not anyone else. Otherwise we can get some temporary material benefit. It's like people worship demigods. Why? They may like to think I have bhakti towards this demigod or that demigod. But bhakti Anya bilashitam shunyam jnanaka majjanavitam anakuru yena krishnanu shiranam bhakti uttama. Pure bhakti is described as without any desire for material sense gratification or mental speculation. So why would someone worship a demigod? For other, because he wants some material gain. Or he wants liberation. Sometimes the worshippers of Lord Shiva, they want liberation from him. Of course, he cannot give it solely. He has to get the blessings of the Lord. Just as the demigods cannot give material benedictions without the blessings of Lord Vishnu, Lord Krishna. So, bhakti is meant for Krishna because it cannot be motivated. There's no exploitation. There's nothing that one wants to get in return. That's what really gives pleasure, is when one gives oneself fully to Krishna. And Krishna reciprocates by giving himself fully. Sometimes we read that I'm purchased by my devotees. They can sell me wherever they like, the Lord says. That type of complete loving exchange, reciprocation, is what the soul is looking for. Then the soul will be happy and he'll not be interested in anything else. And he never falls down from that position. Because that is our natural constitutional position. Any other position is chuta. We will fall down. The demigods fall down. And even from the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, Lord Brahma points out that they also fall down. Because their intelligence is not yet purified. To think that I am Brahman, that's partial self-realization. But to think that I'm the Supreme, I'm everything, that is incorrect and ignorant. So they're not really jnanis, they're only supposedly jnanis. So therefore, how can they remain there with that impure, envious? Because one goes to the Brahma Jyoti to merge out of envy. Why does someone not agree to surrender to Krishna? Out of envy. He doesn't want to accept that there's someone greater than he, that there's someone worshipable other than he. In the material world, the karmis want to become God by acquisition of palaces, wealth, followers, Dhanam Janam, na Dhanam na Janam na Sundaram, Sundarim. They want beautiful women, wealth, followers, and then they can think that they're God. Even up to the point of the demigods and the impersonalists, the Jnanis, they say, no, this is nonsense. This is all false. But they also want to become God by speculation. Just by, they're more intelligent. So instead of working so hard trying to get the money and deal with the bank exchange and all the problems that are involved with fighting with others, they just do it all in their mind. I'm the supreme. Soham. I'm the same. I'm everything. I'm moving the stars in this way. But still the same desire to be the controller, to be the enjoyer. They still want to enjoy separately from Krishna. But that's not possible. No one can enjoy separately from Krishna. No one can exist separate from Krishna. Not even matter can exist separate from Krishna. Nothing exists separate from Krishna. There's no devil that is separately constituted that is not under the direction of Krishna. There's no competitor. Now, someone might say, well, I find that hard to accept, and that's all right. You may find it hard to accept, but that's the reality. We can't change it just to be more democratic or, you know, more equal to everyone, let everyone have rights. God should also be women. No. God is the supreme Purusha, Param Purusha. Otherwise, if we don't accept that, then there's some kind of speculation, some kind of incorrect view. So, in this allegorical story, the first daughter is devotional service, Bhakti Lata. Bhakti Lata indicates Bhakti Lata Beach. Brahmande Brahmite Kono Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. That after many lifetimes, living entity in this material world goes from one planet to another, and if he's fortunate, extremely fortunate, Bhagyavan Jeev, then he comes in contact with a bona fide spiritual master. That is not a material arrangement. It's a completely spiritual arrangement. And when that happens, then the living entity has the choice to become a servant. Here's his chance to reestablish his lost, not lost relationship, but forgotten relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The spiritual master has the power of attorney from Krishna to give Krishna, to reunite the fallen living entity with Krishna. And how does he do that? By planting the seed of bhakti in the heart of the living entity, the conditioned soul. The seed of bhakti means shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam, vishnu parasevanam, archanam, dandanam, dasyam, sakyam, atmanivedanam, nine processes of devotional service. Just like in our temples, Srila Prabhupada ingeniously set them up with programs that include all these activities. And so by engaging in these activities, then one waters the seed of bhakti, and it begins to grow, and he makes spiritual advancement, and his love for Krishna increases, and his addiction to Maya decreases. There's an indirect relationship between Maya and Krishna. As one increases attachment for Krishna, then the attachment to Maya will decrease. It's not that I'm increasing my love for Krishna, but also I have problems. I'm also increasing my attachment for Maya. No, it doesn't work like that. The test is that one will become detestful of material energy. He'll become detestful of enjoying separate from Krishna. Just like Yamuna Acharya said, when I think of my former activities of sense gratification, I spit. Because now I'm getting so much increasing pleasure every day from serving Krishna. How is that increasing pleasure every day? Well, this question sometimes comes up. Sometimes people feel that their taste is waning and they don't know why their taste is waning. Taste is waning because we have another taste. Just like the material world is comprised of three gunas. Tamoguna, the mode of ignorance, Rajoguna, the mode of passion, and Sattvaguna, the mode of goodness. When one is in the lowest mode, ignorance, he's rope. Guna has another meaning, it means rope. So he's tied up by this rope of ignorance. And he's very enthusiastic in the activities of ignorance. He likes darkness, he likes sleep, he likes dreaming, he likes violence, he likes filth. He likes that. He's lazy. So we can see that in ourselves. Sometimes we behave like that. We can analyze, okay, what service would I like to do right now for Krishna? None. No singing, no dancing, no studying, no service. I just want to sleep. I want to forget about everything else. So that's the mode of ignorance. So, but we're very enthusiastic about that mode of ignorance. It's not that we have no enthusiasm for anything, no attachment. This idea of becoming detached from everything, it's not possible. It's the nature of the living entity. Because the mind is accepting and rejecting, one has to learn how to engage the mind. Savaya mana Krishna padaravindayor. Always engage the mind at the lotus feet of Krishna. In our temples, one who lives in the temple, if he's following properly, it's automatic. It's such an easy process. You rise early, you go, see the deity, the mind is engaged, the eyes are engaged. Hearing about Krishna, Srimad Bhagavatam, chanting japa, we're hearing the holy name, the mind, mantra delivers the mind. And during the day we have so many engagements, they're all related with Krishna. Therefore these temples are an oasis for the desert of the material world. Anyone can come, never mind their previous conditioning, and become a great devotee of the Lord if they agree to follow. But if they don't agree to follow, if they do not accept, they don't want to hear, while they're hearing the talks about Krishna, they're thinking, no, 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 I have my own ideas. So then they can't. Or while chanting, the mind is going elsewhere. So it takes practice. But in association with devotees, it is possible. There are so many examples of persons from all different backgrounds, by associating with the devotees and engaging in devotional service, one reaches perfection. And it doesn't have to take a long time. Sometimes Prabhupada would say, just 2 weeks, try it for 2 weeks, and see. We do that in the Bhakta program also. Someone is attracted to Krishna, but he's thinking, you know, I understand that I have to give my life, that this is a lifetime commitment. It's a little too overwhelming for them. So come and try it for a few weeks or a few days. See how you like it. And devotional service is joyfully performed. Sukham kartamavyam. That is the nature of devotional service. Because Krishna is anandamaya vyasa. His nature is fully in bliss. And anyone who associates with Krishna will naturally become blissful. Just like if you associate with a fire, very hot fire, you'll become warm. Or if you immerse yourself in the fire, even an iron rod in the fire becomes red hot, like fire. So if we immerse ourselves with Krishna, then we will come to that stage of full bliss. And from that stage of full bliss, why would anyone want to go back to the condition of material life? Someone in the material world may think that he's enjoying. Just like a hog. A hog thinks he's enjoying eating stool. And human beings think they're enjoying by eating things that are very similar. And everyone wants sex life in the material world, so they're thinking, if I can just get sex, then everything is complete, and I'll be happy fully. But these type of pleasures are very insignificant compared to the pleasure of bhakti. Otherwise, we never see someone like the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, who had such great opportunity for sense gratification. They were wealthy, good-looking, intelligent, highly placed. But they never had even the slightest taste to go back. They burned their bridges. Sanatana Goswami, he ruined his relationship with the Nawab by disregarding his instructions. He wasn't... In other words, one has to choose. Who will I serve? Kamadimam katina katida palita durni desha. I can serve lust, anger, and greed, all my bad masters, but no trapa, no karuna, no pushanti, but from them I get no mercy, no peace, just suffering, serving lusty desires. Degraded. But serving Krishna, one actually becomes free from all suffering conditions. And then he becomes qualified to go back to the spiritual world and enter there and associate with the Lord eternally. And he can stay with Krishna and Krishna's associates, or he can carry out some other activities on behalf of the Lord. It's like we hear about the Vishnu Dutas. The Vishnu Dutas are from Vaikuntha, the spiritual world, but they're sent, they have duties in the material world on behalf of Vishnu. So that's all right. Or sometimes the devotees come to preach in the material world on behalf of Krishna. So everything is available. It's not that one goes to Goloka and he can't get out. No. He's fully free to go anywhere. It's like Narad Muni. He can also go to Goloka Vrindavan. From Garga Samhita we hear about that in other scriptures. Narad Muni goes there, other devotees go there. And then they go and they do their services of preaching. So, in this verse, the spiritual master is emphasized the importance tad vijnanartam so guru eva bigachet. The word eva bigachet means it's imperative. It must be done. If one wants to understand the absolute truth, then he must approach a spiritual master. Samipani with firewood in his hands for sacrifice. As he has to be willing to make the sacrifice to offer himself. He offers himself in the fire of devotional service. He gives himself. So, he has to have complete faith. Yasya deve para bhaktir yata deve tatagaro tasya ite katita hyata prakashante mahatmana. One must have implicit faith in both the Guru and Krishna. Both. Not just one. If one has only implicit faith in the Guru, the Guru may mislead him. So-called Guru. Not a real Guru. A real Guru will never mislead him. But sometimes the so-called Gurus, they claim that you just need me. God is not necessary. Krishna is not necessary. So that's cheating. If someone claims to be a guru, but says there's no God, that's cheating. Because the original guru is God. It's not something that is up to one's own opinion, whether God exists or not. Someone may say, if you choose to accept God, that's your choice, but I don't. That doesn't change anything, whether you don't accept it. That doesn't mean that Krishna is not God. And it doesn't mean that you will not be punished for that. Anyone who doesn't surrender to Krishna is punishable. Just like anyone who doesn't follow the state law. State law is keep to the left. When you're driving, well, in India, any left, right. But some places, they actually have a law that you stay on one side, and if you don't do it, you're punished. And the policeman stops you and says, why are you driving on that side? You say, look, I'm from a different country. I'm used to driving on that side. And what's the difference? They say, no, you're punishable, you have to pay a fine. They say, I don't want to pay the fine. Alright, then you go to prison. And then after prison, after some minor punishment, if you do it again, then longer prison. You can't say that I don't agree. If you don't agree, you get punished. And similarly, Krishna says everyone should surrender to him. Sarvadharmam paricharya mam ekam sharanam braja. Bhaktya mam abhijanati yavam yaschast. Only by devotional service can I be understood. Give up all other dharmas. That means karma dharma, jnana dharma, yoga dharma, Russian dharma, American dharma, Indian dharma. Brahmana Dharma, all dharmas, everything that is upadhi, that is external covering, has to be given up. And everything has to be fully surrendered to Krishna. That is the order of the Lord. If we don't follow, we're punishable. Who will punish us? Yamaraj. Yamaraj is deputed to punish. He's fully empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to punish anyone who doesn't surrender to the Lord. So, if someone says, I don't care if I'm supposed to get punished, then let it be, if it's my destiny. No, it's not our destiny to be punished. We can change our destiny by surrendering. If I surrender now, even though I was destined to be punished for all my past sinful activities, Krishna says, you're free. I will protect you from all sinful reactions. Mashucha, don't fear, don't worry, don't hesitate. So that's a foolish statement, that I don't mind going on suffering if I'm destined. You're not destined to suffer. So, well, maybe suffering doesn't really exist. Well, if you can say like that, maybe suffering doesn't exist, then why not say, well, maybe bliss does exist. You can say, maybe Krishna does exist. If you're so thoughtful, maybe this suffering that I'm experiencing when I get a toothache or when I get some pain, maybe it doesn't exist. Then maybe there's also a place where you can live where there is complete transcendental bliss. So why not try that? Thank you very much for your attention. We have a few minutes. If there's any questions, try to answer.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. You were mentioning it's a very little bit heavy, that if we don't surrender completely and follow Sarvadhamma Pratichaja instruction, then we become punished, just as those who don't surrender at all become punished. But I'm a little confused by that. Yamaraj instructs the Yamadutas that bring to me only those people who have not even one time bowed down before Vishnu, have not even one time have chanted his holy name, not only one time have remembered Vishnu. Bring to me all those fools and rascals who have not performed the real duty of human life, which is to worship Vishnu or Krishna. So when he says not only one time, the word there is ekadapi, then it would seem like, I'm not saying we should just do it one time and then say, okay, then I'm okay now. But it seems like there's tremendous value of even just, as you might say, a partial or a provisional type of surrender, that at the very least one is relieved from this brutal, brutal punishment by the Yamadutas. Do you have any comment on it?
Yes, there are different degrees of punishment. One can be sent to the hellish 28 primary hellish planets and experience excruciating pain. Or even one can be put in the heavenly planets, but for one who's fully engaged in devotional service, he considers these things to be hellish. Even the heavenly planets. Well, what's the difference between Indra's not attacked by Yamaraj, but he's attacked by lust. He's attacked by fear. He's attacked by illusion. He's attacked by pride. Aren't these hellish? To be under the influence of lust? What could be more hellish than that? To be engaged in such disgusting activities and to think it's pleasure? So we have a soft, we're soft-hearted towards this material energy, as if it's not that bad. It's bad. It is that bad. Everything about it is bad. There's nothing good here in the material world. Even if one thinks that I'll live in the mode of goodness, I'll be a nice brahmana. Just like here in Vrindavan, 5,000 years ago, there were some brahmanas. They were performing sacrifices. But they were Karmakandiya brahmanas, and they wanted to live nicely in the material world. And Krishna and Balaram and his coward boyfriends were nearby, and the boys were sent to go ask, to beg for some fruits, some food for Krishna and Balaram. But the brahmanas, the yajnik brahmanas, they refused. They said, "We're too busy right now, don't disturb us." But later on, when they came to their senses, they condemned themselves. The word is dick. Fie on us. To hell with our studying. To hell with our brahminical principles. To hell with all the things that we, all our learning and all this. Without surrendering to Krishna, it's completely useless. What is the value in remaining in the material world? Well, not surrendering to Krishna. What is the value of any activity that is not surrendered to Krishna? Yes, we may say, well, someone is performing sacrifices that will help him to come up to the point where he may be able to surrender to Krishna. So in that sense, it can be accepted. So I agree with your point that if someone is not ready for full surrender to Krishna, then even performing vratas, sacrifices and brahmacharya and giving in charity, these things can be accepted as favorable. So, but they're also part of devotional service. And if they don't leave to Krishna, then shramayeva hi kevalam, then it's all a waste of time. So as long as it's part of my progress towards surrendering to Krishna, then we can accept that I'm so fallen, I'm here in the material world, I haven't surrendered, but I'm taking little tiny steps in hope to get there. So there's some hope there. But if one thinks that just taking these little tiny steps in and of themselves, and it's not so important that I surrender to Krishna, then that's a waste of time and energy. Any other? Over here.
Maharaj, you mentioned that Sri Yamunacharya, he spit at the thought of activities of sense gratification which he performed formerly. Why does that appear in the mind of such an exalted devotee, these thoughts?
Why does it appear? Well, spitting at it is not, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, the thought of sense gratification.
He said the thought of it I spit at. So he's spitting at the thought. He's not indulging in it. Actually, the desires enter like rivers into the sea, but the sea never becomes agitated, so you can't stop desires from coming. For example, in the sannyasa initiation, the second one in ISKCON, I happened to be present, 1970, Srila Prabhupada was initiating some sannyasis. And he told them that now that you're taking sannyas, it doesn't mean you'll have no material desires. He said, but now you cannot act on it. So that's a very big point, that you can't expect that there will be no desire. But one cannot act on it. And when one becomes completely on the highest platform, then no material desires would ever come. Because everything would be... But that's also for Krishna. Spitting at Maya, even the great devotee, Dhruva Maharaj, he stepped on the head of death. So, kicking out, they become angry. What about anger? Hanuman became angry. We may think anger is a kind of pollution, loss of self-control, but for Krishna, one can become angry. One can become disgusted with Maya for Krishna. So, there's no problem there. There's no fall down on his part. Even sannyas can be favorable for devotional service, giving up one's attachment to this world. As long as it's for Krishna, then it's favorable. And if it's not for Krishna, if it's for something else, then one becomes polluted by any activity. Even if it's a nice activity, so-called nice activity. Just like Prakriti Sahajas, they have the nice activity of wanting to be with Krishna. That's a very nice activity. But Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatra Vidimbina Akantiki Hare Bhakti Upataya Vikalpate. If they don't follow the Shruti and the Smriti, the Vedas, then their so-called devotional service becomes a disturbance in society. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.